The Bulletin. Well, very pleased to welcome into the Bulletin this morning Michael O'Keefe, who's you'll have seen on the AM show, News Hub, Sports Juno over the years. Has been a presenter as well, former Olympic soccer goalkeeper as well. And we won't mention the brother Ben, but because most brothers hate that. So, Michael, welcome onto the show this morning. Before we get stuck into the topics of the day, what about your Olympic experience? How did you enjoy that?
Oh, morning, Smithy. Thanks for having me on. Oh, I mean, I loved it. I mean, I was going to say it's sort of every boy's dream, every girl's dream, but I guess in my sense, probably wasn't, only in the respect that football was never an event I watched during the Olympics. But, like, I've always loved the Olympics. So, to actually go to an Olympics, and I guess being a footballer, to be able to go to the one in London as well and have the opportunity to play at Old Trafford at St. James, I was incredibly special, very fortunate to have those memories, and to say that Neymar still hasn't scored on me.
Well, as a lot of goalkeepers that can't say that. Do you think they got it right with the under-23 mix with the senior players? Do you like that style of it?
I mean, I can understand their thinking. Like, FIFA wants to protect their, I guess, golden egg, you know, their sort of premier product being the Men's World Cup. So I can understand why they want it to be an under-23 event. And I think professional players, at least, you know, the top under-23 professional players, they're still going to the Olympics, you know, I think, and it's probably the law of the Olympics is increased even more so now. So it's actually, I mean, it's quite cool to have that distinction as well, every, you know, in between the World Cup years, to have the under-23 tournament. And, I mean, I'm not complaining. It gave me a chance to go to the Olympics. So, I still like it.
Let's get on to the Warriors. We've just had Andrew Webster on, and whilst he's worried about a few areas of the game, two or three in particular, he does always keep the faith with his players. Not many, if any, changes, really, apart from injury from time to time, but not the case with the South. So they've had a gutsful, and Andre Demetrio is gone, and people are saying Wayne Bennett all of a sudden straight in.
Yeah, I was, I guess, surprised and not surprised to wake up to that news this morning. Well, first of all, I like what Andrew Webster is doing in terms of just continuity with his players. I don't think there's a need for wholesale changes. I don't think the problems have been that bad. But I think what it shows to me is Andrew Webster's clarity, that the clarity of who he is as a coach, what the Warriors are as a team, and the confidence that he has in his players and, I guess, the style that they're playing, I guess, for the players to turn it around. It's been interesting. I remember watching the game over the weekend. They just seemed a little bit tired to me. And then I was listening to Rocco Berry, Andrew Webster, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck earlier in the week at their media stand-up. And I would not know this. Like you, Smithy, I heard you mention before, I'm a very amateur league fan, so I don't appreciate the rigours of those short turnarounds and how that can affect your sort of defensive play. And it sounds like those short turnarounds have really had an impact, and maybe we were seeing that as a result of those turnarounds on the field and the defensive plays. So, I mean, I love what Webster is doing with the Warriors, for one. So then going to the South's case, you know, they've been plagued by problems. I mean, I feel like this story has been sort of bumbling and bubbling away for weeks now. So finally they've obviously pulled the pin. One thing I do find interesting is the fact that they've gone for Ben Hornby to be in charge for the rest of the season. I mean, if that screams problems in terms of not having, like, you're putting someone as a caretaker manager in charge for three quarters of the season, pretty much. So that, to me, says that things are so bad, we're prepared to get rid of our coach and put in an interim, someone who is largely unproven at the helm of the side, for the rest of the season. And that says to me that things are that bad, they're willing to do that. Yes, it would be very hard to get in a coach. It's not like the Premier League where you have a host of recently sacked managers that are sort of looking for jobs. But yeah, it was an interesting move, but obviously things have become so untenable there that it was a move that they felt they needed to make.
Interesting you should say that, because as you were talking along those lines there, I was thinking, does that remind me of a club that I know about a year and a half ago when they had to sack a coach and have an interim one? And then finally got the right one, and you know which club I'm talking about because we all witnessed it firsthand.
Yeah, and like I think back to the Tigers last year as well, and they put Benji in charge as a bit of a trial period. And like, I'm not sure what I make of the whole trial period because, one, it sort of speaks to me, it says to me that maybe the club isn't sure or don't have a lot of options. But they want to just give this person a crack, you know, whether 3, 4, 5 games or 3/4 of the season is the right amount of time, I'm not too sure. But yeah, these things happen in sport, and I think in every sport the scenarios are different. For example, you look at the Premier League, they have different repercussions for, you know, where you finish in the season. So sacking managers is just like another day in the Premier League. In Super Rugby, obviously, there was chat about Rob Penny potentially getting the cut because of the Crusaders' poor performances. But, like, for what? You know, there's no repercussions of getting relegated or anything like that. So, you know, I don't feel like there's really the need to do that in Super Rugby. So, yeah, it's interesting. But I think, you know, league, there's a bit more, I guess there's more precedent in league to sort of sack coaches mid-season than there is in the Super Rugby, but maybe not so much compared to the Premier League.
So, as you say, Ben Hornby comes in. He can't do any worse for a start, so he's probably going to, and quite often a team will react to a change of leadership in the managerial role and play well. You see it happen in the Premier League from time to time, and it's just sort of a knee-jerk reaction to someone new coming in and telling you what to do. But what about Wayne Bennett? I mean, he's going to finish at the Dolphins, and what a terrific job there he's done at setting up a franchise and getting some early momentum. Is he the kind of answer to the Rabbitohs? Because I'm not sure every kind of player responds to a Wayne Bennett.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm not sure if Wayne Bennett is the man. Another thing... Another problem maybe that I see is, they are effectively without a coach and without someone who can think about long-term plans, their roster for next season, their squad for next season. So, you know, they are potentially shooting themselves in the foot with that. Bennett obviously has history at Souths. I'm sure the fans, I'm assuming that he'll be well received. But, honestly, I'm not too sure. I find it interesting. I don't know. Are there many head coaches knocking around that are available to replace and take charge of Souths? I'm actually not too sure. I find it interesting. And, I mean, this is going to be a bit of a segue. But it puts into the spotlight for me just the difficulty clubs have, and how hard the job is to select a head coach. And I think that a team that has done that superbly, and it's not an NRL team, but it's a team that New Zealand has, I guess, a vested interest in this year particularly, is the Phoenix. I think when Ufuk Tele was in charge of the Phoenix, we were great. We were really good. Our style of play, our sort of fortunes had been turned around. And filling the boots of Tele was going to be a tough task. But the Phoenix had confidence in their assistant coach, Giancarlo Italiano, to fill those boots. And he has done that and some. And probably there hasn't been enough credit, or there hasn't been any credit at the moment, said of or laid on to the management of the Phoenix for actually making that decision, because as we are talking about currently, managers come and go, head coaches come and go, whether it be sacked or leaving, and the ability to know who is the right person for the club is really, really tough. And I think that's one thing that the Phoenix have done amazingly well with the appointment of Giancarlo Italiano this season.
We've got Michael O'Keefe on the bulletin as we speak, and I've got to ask you this question. Numbers-wise, will there be a more watched A-League game tonight than the history of A-League without the Phoenix being involved? I'm talking about New Zealand viewership.
Absolutely not, probably. I mean, I found myself on the weekend flicking between both the Phoenix game and the Mariners game as well. It's going to be good. I mean, I think the chances of it happening are probably quite slim, but there is a chance. And what an occasion that would be for the Phoenix to, I guess, qualify top for the regular season, put the Premier's plate away in the trophy cabinet, and then look to secure the grand final title as well in a few weeks' time. It's going to be great. And, yeah, I hope Adelaide can do it. I think they've played each other twice this season so far. I think the last time they played each other, Central Coast won 4-0. The very first game of the season, these two teams played each other. I mean, Adelaide won that game 3-1, but a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. The Mariners are on a roll. They're a superb team, riding a high at the moment, seemingly just can't lose. Let's just hope that they can tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's not hope against hope. I feel there's a chance. You know, pressure is like at the in the crunch end of seasons. And on that subject, is it City's to lose? Can Arsenal get over the top of them or not?
Oh, I mean, I would love if Arsenal did win the Premier League, but I do feel like it's City's to lose. It's just they've been in these positions before where all they need to do is win out the season and they will win the Premier League title, and they have completed it almost in a canter. You know, they don't look like losing. They do have an interesting run in. I mean, they've got Wolves this week and then Fulham the week after that, which I'd expect them to do comfortably. But then their final two games against Tottenham and West Ham could prove to be a little bit trickier. Now, remember, all they pretty much have to do, providing, if Arsenal win out, they just need to drop one game and it'll come down to goal difference, which Arsenal hold a superior goal difference at the moment, I believe. So if they were to drop a game, possibly one of those Tottenham or West Ham games, or drop points rather. But unfortunately, I probably see City going all the way again this year.
Cool to catch up with you, Michael. Really appreciated your time this morning. And we will ring you again, I'm sure, because very, very interesting time for football. And I'd love to speak to you pre-Olympics as well, regarding when they name that team and what they've got to look forward to with their draw, etc. And we're hot in the middle too of Champions League as well, a draw this morning. Michael O'Keefe, thank you very much for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Yes, Willie.
Cheers, Michael O'Keefe there, folks. You'll have seen him on the AM show. He reads from time to time on the 6 o'clock news as well. And, of course, he is a sports journalist with News Hub, and just watching on the news, actually, on the CNN news, the four goals and the draw between Real Madrid and Bayern Munich this morning, and Harry Kane's goal was, of course, from the penalty spot. Takes a good penalty, does Harry? I think it's fair to say.